Blog Talk Radio.
And good Wednesday afternoon. We are doing Talk America here at Blog Talk Radio on a Wednesday instead of a Friday. We had a couple of some glitches last Friday, so we're doing the show today. Anyhow, I hope everyone is having a great week. We've got a Memorial Day weekend coming up this weekend. I'm sure a lot of you will be off for 3-4 days, and you know, enjoy your day and remember why we are celebrating Memorial Day weekend. Our show today, we're going to talk about two very important people in history. First, we're going to talk about Claudette Colvin, who was actually a big part of the beginning of the civil rights movement. And we'll get into her history a little bit later. But it's very interesting what's happened. A lot of people, from what I posted on Facebook last week, were kind of not in shock, but they were, I guess they didn't know the history of what happened what happened, you know, with Rosa Parks and Claudette Colvin. Anyhow, we'll discuss that, and we're also going to bring in one of my favorite scientists that I've always admired. It has been Percy Julian, and he is quite an amazing man. He invented and created some by accident, very important chemicals that we now use in our daily life. So we will be talking about him, and like I said, we're going to intermix the two because I believe they're both are very, very important. One is famous for all the right reasons. The other one is not so famous because of circumstances at the time. But anyhow, I'm going to bring on my guest co-host, and I'm sorry, it's one of those days. This is Shea H. Bradley with you on Talk America, because it's one of those days. I haven't even had a drink yet, so yeah. Anyhow, I'm going to bring in my guest co-host, Vicki Knudsen. Vicki, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Shay.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's a Wednesday afternoon, and I got a big weekend planned. I'm actually off this weekend, and you know, out of 5 children, as of Sunday, we will have 5 out of 5 high school graduates. So
wow.
That's we're batting 1,000 there. I'm really glad about that. I used to think that you needed a 4-year degree to support a family and things like that, and I no longer feel that way. So now, you know, I feel like as long as you do something and do it well, you can usually rise up in the ranks pretty easily, no matter what it is.
Sure.
But so I'm not so concerned about having 4 out of 4 college graduates. That doesn't bother me near as much. But I wanted to know.
You know, I think
high school.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I think a lot of what's going on today is, you know, you do need a bit of education, especially if you're going to go into like computer science and things like that. But you know, right now the way I have a lot of friends like myself. That have, you know, are moving on to creating our own businesses and really working for yourself. And I think that's where the future of, and if you're able to, and there's money out there. In fact, I'm going to a seminar next week here in Dallas on learning how to actually get money and on flipping homes and buying real estate. And I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, there's so many different things that all of us can do. You just have to lock on to your inner abilities and talents and what you're able to do and what you're not able to do. And I know some people, it takes some others longer than others. I knew when I was young what I wanted to do. I just never had a complete support of, you know, going to art school and working in certain industries that I wanted. So it took, it's taken a little while longer, and I'm still trying to get there, you know. But I have nephews. I've got a nephew that he just graduated from high school last year. He's going to aviation school. He's doing well. Talked to his dad today. I'm so proud of him. Hey, AJ, I'm really proud of you, and I applaud him because he's only, I think he's just right over 18 years old right now. And he's become a certified aviation technician. And anyway,
awesome.
I guess our hope. Yeah, you know, that's just so, he's always, you know, the kid refuses to drive a car, so he has to be driven, chauffeured to school. but he wants to fly planes, and he's already been, from what I'm saying, he's been offered some jobs even before he started school. He's that bright, you know. Like my point is here, some people, you know, like my nephew and other people's children, they have natural talent and they already know where they're going to go. Other people, it takes them a while, but I think eventually everybody finds their niche. And it looks like, I always tell people, you know, I have friends I talked to recently. They're like, I'm bored with my job. But one just resigned from his job. He's like, I go, what are you going to do? I go, you know, Shay, you know, my salsa has been award winning in Texas. And so, and I've listened to you years ago where you said, you know, turn it into a business. And so he decided, you know what, why am I working for other people? I'm going to go with my salsa, because he sells quite a bit of it all the time. And it's like the best step. He does a red salsa, a green salsa, a tomatillo salsa. He does chili peppers and jellies, and absolutely phenomenal. One day maybe I should have him on my show, because that actually would be good advertising for him.
It would be. That'd be awesome. I'd love to talk to him about that. You know,
I
was the same thing. Out of our children, you know, our oldest one, he's very bright, has always been very bright, but he was never a dedicated student. There's not even close, you know. So college really wasn't a good route for him. And he's working and doing well and supporting his family, and, you know, they're making it. I mean, I'm not saying they're rich, but they're making it. And he's doing better and better all the time. He's moving up. Now, all the rest of them have either gone to college, or Dominic, of course, who is also in aviation with the U.S. Army. So, and he's doing well as well. And he's going to school, too, because getting your education while you're in the military makes a whole lot of sense, because there's a whole lot of money for it. So you better use it while it's there, because you don't know. That's the problem with the way budgets are cut and things like that. You don't know what's going to be available next year or not. So I say use it while it's there, you know. So he's going to be doing that as well. And then Jordan will start, you know, obviously in the fall. But go ahead, Jeff. You're going to add to that?
It's, you know, just reiterating what I stated earlier. Everybody has their hidden talent. Some people, you know, some people find it later in life. You know, I find a lot of the younger people, especially millennials, you know, they'll work at a job, make a lot of money, and then realize that's not what they want to do. But the nice thing about that is that they've already made a little goose egg, so they go on and do other things, you know, with their life, which is great. I know not everybody has that opportunity, but I think if you have a little bit of perseverance and you're willing to work hard and hang in there, I really think you can make anything happen. I've encountered lots of friends in my life and even lately, and I go for it, you know, just don't get upset if things don't turn out right away. Sometimes it takes time, and, you know, give it a couple years, and, you know, if it doesn't happen then, you know, it's time to move on.
Well, you know, I'd rather have them do something like that than go to college, get a degree, and get out and hate it and not use it. and then do something that they could have done without a degree, but they're, you know, now $25,000 in debt or more, you know.
Sure.
So that's, you got to make smart decisions. If you're going to go to college, you've got to make smart decisions about your major. You can do what you're passionate about on the side, but if you're not positive you can make a living at it, you should really consider a dual major or a different major altogether and do what you're passionate about. You know.
Well, and it's important that you have people, a support system too. I know a lot of people don't have a support system. You know, a lot of times their parents want them to go to a four-year college or become a doctor or a lawyer. And that's not always the case. You know, I wish that our school system would change to a point where, you know, once you get to a certain grade level, let's say middle school, and they test everybody and like, hey, do you want to, you know, if you're really passionate about going to, say, art school or music school or learn a trade, and if you're really passionate and that's what you want to do with your life, I think you should have that option to take a test at a certain level and then go to a trade school if that's what you want to do and start learning your craft.
Great.
You know, why they do it in a lot of European countries, especially in England, and I think that would really benefit a lot of people, because I always hear a lot of kids going, you know, I don't know why I'm in school for 12 years. I know what I want to do already. I want to be a mechanic, or I want to be a fireman,
mm-hmm.
And so why not let them nourish that when they're young, instead of waiting till they're 18, 19 after school, and you know, that's just me. That's my feeling on that, on this topic.
Yeah. I totally agree. You've got to do something you're passionate about. You can't totally hate your job and expect to make it a career for 40 years, you know, which our generation, we will be working at least till we're 70, I would guess. I don't think we're going to be able to retire at 65 like our parents did. We're going to have to get older before we can afford to retire because of the way things have changed. So you don't want to do something that long and be miserable with it. So, but you got to have a happy meeting between money and happiness. So, I agree. Absolutely. So, we're going to move on here to our real topic.
Let's move on to news today. So, let's talk about what happened yesterday in Manchester, England. You know, as I started seeing the reports in, I was... I guess I was in the middle of posting and blogging and, I was just horrified. It was like, you know, everything that's going on in Europe right now, and still people just seem to be unwilling to call it out for what it is. And it bothers me because I have some really a handful of friends that PM'd me last night and go, what the hell's going on? When are people going to learn that, you know, that the root cause is what it is?
Right.
You know, but they don't want to call it what it really is. And it's like, you know, and the first thing I heard I don't know what they call the head of the police department. They're the constable or... I have no idea. I don't know. But, you know, the first thing he said is, let's not get excited. Let's not start, racial profiling people. And, you know, we're all together in this. And so he pretty much whitewashed the whole scenario. And
right.
I was like, when are people going to wake up to the realization that we're in a world terror, and it's not going to stop. I just don't know where we're going to end up if, you know, I know here in the city of Dallas, they called right away news reports to, you know, that all our venues, I guess because we have a couple concerts, so they beefed up the security at these concerts here, and I'm sure as it did across the nation. I just think it's really sad for England right now. You know, they've had to mobilize their military, because I don't know if there's more going on. And there's just so many reports coming out right now, and it just boggles my mind. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Vicki?
I agree. I think that Europe is making a big mistake right now that they aren't going to be able to backtrack from. The changes that they're making now are more than likely permanent changes that will never go away. That's my opinion. I don't know, obviously I can't predict the future, but I'm just saying having this huge Muslim influx is going to affect their rights, their fears, their ability to freely move around, and it's probably not going to affect it in a positive way. And they've got to come to terms with that reality without whitewashing it, just like you said, because they're not getting less hostile or doing less terrorism, more and more all the time. And the victim blaming in this just drives me insane. Well, it's our fault because we invaded their country. Well, it's not exactly what happened. I mean, nobody was anywhere until 9/11. And I'm not saying that, there wasn't some calls for action that we didn't intervene prior to that, all the way back to the 1950s. We have meddled probably where we shouldn't have. But sometimes we were asked to meddle either by the UN or by the country itself. And also, our criticism of Islam makes them want to hurt us. Well, there's always going to be criticism of any religion. There's criticism of Christianity constantly, and we're not out there beheading people because of it. We've got to hold Islam to the same standards we hold Christians, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem that people are not willing to confront because they don't want to be seen as racist or xenophobic. But yet the root problem, the root problem's right there. It has been there for the past 1,000 years that, that Islam has been around. It really just makes my head explode when people don't understand and I have to school them on what the Crusades were all about. And we talk about this constantly on the show. And I think that's where a lot of the misconceptions of, coming from Christian people, other people that are not Christian don't understand because they haven't studied the history, and they don't realize that this has been going on for a very long time, and it's going to keep going on until it comes to that time where just something is going to explode and it is going to be a huge war, who knows what. But I wish people would do a little educate themselves, and I try to. I have some friends that are atheists and they don't know the whole situation, so I refer them to online links, and they go and read them, and they're like, wow. They go, wow, a lot of these things actually make sense now. Yeah, we don't like that everything, we're warring over religion, but now what's going on makes sense. I go, absolutely. If you study the history of Christianity, you'll understand that.
Well, my most fiercest rebuttals are to the people that say, Christians in Africa are slaughtering Muslims. That's what's frequently the response that I see. Well, Christians in Africa have slaughtered Muslims in retaliation for the oppression that they were giving. I mean, if there's anybody that doubts that Christians aren't being slaughtered in Islamic predominant countries, they are in denial because that's what's happening. And if they didn't fight back, they would be non-existent. They would be gone. And so would everything that they held dear, their families, their history, everything. And so I get tired of that argument. On top of the fact that, the big one that was done was 20 years ago. Up until this point, any retaliation has been very, very small from Christians. It has not been predominant. It has not been, sanctioned by Christians in the U.S. or the Pope or any of our Christian leaders, and all saying, good for you in Africa, go kill those Islam people, and they're not doing any of that. So, which is completely different. You can go on the internet and find many, many videos of imams and Islamic leaders praising the death of infidels. You can't find that with Christian leaders because we don't do it and we don't encourage it. And they just want to totally, you know, not even acknowledge any of that.
I believe also, I think because Christianity, you know, it's been around for 2,000 years. And, you know, and we can't whitewash what early Christians did to other people. And they did it because it was, you know, it was Christianity was still in infancy. It wasn't a good established religion. And there was even a lot of infighting between different denominations, even up until the 20th century. And there's still infighting. But early Christians, of course, they committed atrocities, and so did the Roman Catholic Church. You know, they were the first to go around the world and do horrible things. But the thing is, with Islam, they know what they're doing. It's you know, there's no excuse for it, for
right.
whatever there just isn't, because you would have thought people would have learned from what the early Christians did to others, but here they're doing it openly and defiantly and defiant that, you know, this is their right to do what they want to do. And I really just don't understand that logic and people that support it. I just don't.
No, absolutely not. But it's, you know, did you read also some articles about this in the U.S. where there are Islamic candidates for governor in Michigan now? I think that we're going to see a whole lot more people from Islam running for office, and that's just part of the plan, just like the mayor of London, who will never take responsibility for Islamic terrorism because he is Islamic as well. And I know if it was you and me, Shay, who was up there trying to call the masses after a big event like this, and it was a Christian who went in there and slaughtered people in the name of God, we would be the first ones there saying that was absolutely wrong. That's not what Christianity is about. And what can we do so it doesn't happen again? And all those questions would be asked. But liberals are so defensive of Islam that they will not allow it to be criticized. And that is the issue. And Islam won't allow it to be criticized. So we will never get to the bottom of any of this until they can do that.
And another thing that really bothered me this week was, two gay men were sentenced under Sharia law in Indonesia Banda Aceh, and they were flogged 80 times each one for being openly homosexual. And I think they were set up the way it went down, but again, nobody seemed to say anything about it. I didn't see a lot from the LGBT community whatsoever. And even some of the people and some of my fiercest rivals that I hear in Dallas, I didn't see them posting anything about it. And so that tells me that either they don't care or they're afraid to hurt somebody's feelings because of their culture or religion. But yet they still couldn't stand up for these two men in Indonesia. And so, you know, they got flogged, and it just seems like everybody went on their little merry way, and there you go. And that's the way it all fell down. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. I just try to stay away from it. Even I have slowed down my posting, because as everybody knows, I'm in a 30-day ban right now for a different reason and other than a Muslim post. But yeah, that was kind of interesting. I think I was kind of catfished into that, but You know, he got me at the right moment.
He absolutely did. But yeah, it bothers me too that people who claim to be pro woman and pro gay and pro child can still close their eyes at the atrocities going on there, and how those things happen in Islamic dominant countries and are not punished. Here, if a Catholic priest or any other religion, because, you know, studies have clearly shown that Catholics were not the worst child abusers. It was pretty much equal over all base. And so, but, you know, Catholics got all the publicity for it. But, you know, if they were found guilty, they went to trial. And if they were found guilty, they were punished. I mean, that doesn't happen in Islam. It's allowed. They punish the victim of rape. The victim. Unless four, you know, males witnessed it. And so that basically means four men would have to stand there and let it happen. So it's never going to be prosecuted. And it's a horrible, horrible, you know, government, which is all it is. The Sharia law is exactly that. It's a law.
I think part of I didn't witness a lot of postings about, everyone was so upset and distraught about what happened yesterday, and I started thinking about it before I retired for the night, how I didn't see a lot of postings about how the concert was mainly females. And, you know, there were males there, and I'm sure I saw a lot of the interviews. So I'm sure they're either, you know, they're gay or otherwise. But my point is that no one spoke out about how these terrorists targeted this concert of thousands of young women. And the media was silent about it, completely silent about it. And so...
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not. I haven't posted about it, but that just kind of just like, wow. You know, if you wanted to really understand misogyny, there you go. You know, you just said bombs off. You know, in a venue full of young females, and that's just atrocious in my book.
This is another thing you will never see Christians do, and that is go bomb or suicide bomb or bomb the youth of Islam. Because they don't like them singing and dancing or something to that effect, which is essentially what this was. Christians don't go – if Christians fight back and slaughter Muslims, it's fighting back as a general rule. I'm not saying it's never happened because we know in the history of the U.S. it has, or the history of time, I should say it has. But it is – it's not like anybody's out there targeting civilians that claims to be a Christian. If they have to, and, you know, fighting wars with this kind of, this is a whole new thing for our military. We've never, ever, until, you know, 2011, pretty much, fought a war with a non-army. And that's essentially what this is. There's no official army. So you don't have, the only difference between a radicalized jihadist and a run-of-the-mill civilian in Pakistan is very, very difficult. And so they've got, you know, got to do their best with intel. It's going to be hard to never include a civilian in that because they're, you know, it's not like they're housed in barracks and things to that effect. They go home at night, and that's what they do. So it's a whole new ball game for us, and we've probably made some mistakes. I know we have, but we've gotten better. Yeah, and we never, as a military, target civilians, ever. We're trained not to do that. And so whenever I hear, made a big bombing mistake and hit some hospital or something, 9 times out of 10, that wasn't really a hospital. It was a ammo for catch, and we knew it was, but somebody put a big red cross on it, like all of a sudden it's a hospital. It's been happening for, you know, millions of years, probably. Anyway, yeah, very, very frustrating times right now, and you have to be willfully ignorant to ignore Islamic terrorism for what it is.
I, you know what, I, I hope eventually people will wake up. I hope Doyle and friends that I have in Europe understand that they're under a lot of danger. And I just honestly really just pray that they wake up and realize, you know, we're destroying our own cultures, our own ourselves. And, you know, there comes to a point where you just can't, you can't continue on the same path of destruction. Anyhow, we're going to go on a short break, and we, when we come back, we are going to talk about Mrs. Claudette Colvin. We'll be back in about 40 seconds, everyone. And we are back on the air. I am your host, Shay H. Bradley, with my guest host, Vicki Knutson. We spent the last half hour talking about the situation, the terrorist bombings that happened in Manchester, England yesterday. But now we're going to go on to the topic of our show, which is, the name of our show is The Day the City Stood Still, Percy to the Rescue. And today, we're going to start with Claudette Colvin. Now, Claudette was a very interesting person. She was born in 1939, and she's still very much alive. And I'm just kind of, her biography talks about how she's an activist, a civil rights activist, a medical professional. And she spent time in the civil rights movement in Alabama in the 50s. And what's really interesting about her, you know, people, you know, go and see monuments on Rosa Parks, and not to diminish her, you know, what she did, and, you know, what she did was honorable, but Claudette Colvin was actually, you know, she gave up her seat on a bus months and months before Rosa Parks ever did, and so that caused a lot of interesting situations during the time, and, you know, this all happened on March 2nd, 1955, and of course, you know, she was arrested and became one of the plaintiffs in Browder versus Gale, and that which ruled Montgomery's segregation system was unconstitutional. Anyhow, Vicki, what are your thoughts? Do you understand about Claudette Colvin and what she did for the civil rights movement, and where her rightful place is in history?
Yeah, she's, you know, one of those silent activists, I think. You know, she's probably not well known to, if you just put the name out there, I don't think most people will know of her, but she, because of one main reason. The NAACP, didn't think she would be the best front for their movement because she was spunky and mouthy and sort of a rogue in her own right. So they felt like she wouldn't have made a good spokesperson for them, so they didn't really use her, what she had been through, as a banner for civil rights. So I can't imagine
now,
being the spunky woman and not having that happen.
Well, And you know what, people need to understand, back in the 50s, and this is the mid-50s, you know, early 50s, people, society was a different world back then. It was still very much, you know, the starch shirt and, you know, the well-groomed hat wearing a woman and in gloves and, you know, always taking care of your mannerisms and how you speak and how you present yourself. And, you know, I don't know Miss Claudette Colvin in person, but I'm sure if she's anything like, you know, biographies that I've seen on TV, yeah, you were right. She probably was very spunky and very outspoken. And no, she wasn't the right person to speak for the NAACP. But, You know, as in everything, there's always a place for everybody. And, you know, I believe she found her place where she belonged. And even then, even though she wasn't the front person like Rosa Parks, she understood that she had an important duty to herself and to her community and to the civil rights movement of the time.
Right.
I just find it so interesting. I think because of her name. I love her name. I think her name, when I first heard of Claudette Colvin, it was just like, wow. And I studied a little bit about her in high school and you know, even after. And, you know, the reason why I do this show is, and I wish some of my black friends would come on the show and talk to us. But I'm sure they're listening. I hope they are. And I hope we do this justice. But I saw, you know, I'm a big fan of Drunk History. And they happen to, you know, they do, if people who don't know what Drunk History is, it's a show where they do 15-minute sketches. And the host and the people presenting the sketch, and it's all in American history. And it's very comical. But they're drunk. They start out drinking at the beginning, whether they're at a club or at home or wherever. And by the end of the show, pretty much they all drop drunk on the floor. But
yeah.
The way they presented Claudette Colvin was absolutely how you would think she is. You know, just mouthy and just, you know, probably four-letter words. They brought her to life in such a great way that just seemed real, where it wasn't static, you know, like, well, this is her and this is how it is. It's like, no, they brought her to life in a way that was probably more true to her. And anybody that hasn't watched it, good, yeah, you know, rent it on a weekend from Netflix or whatever, and you will enjoy it. I believe it was season two. It's either one or two, because I think they're four seasons now. And I hope they do a fifth season, because it's very entertaining. Anyhow, that is just my take on how I now see Claudette Colvin.
I found two things interesting about this story, Shay, more than the rest of it. Two things. The first one is she was like 15 when this happened. Isn't that correct? And
absolutely
she knew,
correct, yes.
Huh? It knew from what she learned in school that this was against her constitutional rights. So that I respect. And the other thing I respect about her is, even as spunky and, you know, open as she was about her feelings and what she felt about segregation and things like that, it never bothered her that Rosa Parks got the credit for the not moving on the bus business, even though she'd done it 9 months earlier. It never bothered her that Rosa got that credit. And I think that is really somebody taking one for the team and knowing that even though she may have sparked the movement and didn't get the credit for it, she did have a very, you know, catalytic role in the civil rights movement and was okay with that. And so I respected her very much for those two things. Not too many 15-year-olds back in the 50s were really, really clear on what their constitutional rights were, especially in the South. So
yeah.
I respect her for that.
Yeah. I still read a lot about her. I just find her a very fascinating person. You know, and I am still, I'm proud that she's still around. And I don't know if she likes to talk about what's happened in her life. I wish she would, you know, go on a show, on someone's show, and because, you know, that would be really interesting to watch. And, you know, and have it told from her perspective. And I hope, you know, before her time is up that she might do it. I don't know what her, you know, her physical health is or if she's able to, but I wish she would. So anyway, let's continue. So after the Browder versus Gale, where she was one of four plaintiffs. I'm sorry, I'm just like, I'm having one of those days today. Yeah, so anyway, they, you know, it had to do with the Montgomery segregation bus system. And, you know, eventually the case went the way, you know, they ruled that the Montgomery segregated bus system was unconstitutional. And so then Ms. Colvin, she left soon after, from what I understand, in all the notes, and she became a nurse's aide. And, you know, I just find her, you know, just talking about her is fascinating because I wanted to do this show so badly last week, and I'm sorry we couldn't do it. You know, we just had some technical glitches, and that's just what happens.
Well, you know, I have her quote. Her quote is, I kept saying, this is in the court case, I kept saying, he has no civil right. This is my constitutional right. You have no right to do this. And I just kept blabbing things out, and I never stopped. That was worse than stealing, you know, talking back to a white person. So she really had some guts.
Yeah. Well, and for 15 years old, she was very precocious. And, you know, it takes people with, I guess, with, you know, a fire inside them. It's like I was talking to you last night and talking to some other people about, you know, I this is kind of off topic a little bit, but it kind of, you know, blends into what how Claudette Colvin's personality is. That, you know, I was watching a show on Steve Bannon and from Breitbart, and it really threw a loop into my whole political thinking, because I realized, you know, what I had been following and believing in is actually completely the opposite. And you know, it sounded alarms off in my head, going whoa, and it just seemed like my whole world just stopped in front of me, because here was something that I just, like, this is so incredible, I've got to tell people. I just, you know, I feel like I've been following the wrong people all these years and believing in the wrong things. And you know, when it came to what's going on in the Trump administration, the possible issues and problems that are going on, and here was a cause that I was just like, wow. But my point is that there are a lot of people that right now that we know, well, not personally, but, you know, being on social media, that they're not willing to speak out on anything. And that really irritates me, Vicki. And yeah, there are big, big name people that just will not speak out on anything. And now I understand, I'm standing back going, I understand why now. And, you know, me, I've always had a big mouth, so I just say it the way it is. And, you know, sometimes I feel like Claudette Colvin. You know, sometimes I piss people off because I just say it the way it is. And if you don't like it, too bad.
Yes. And, you know, I'm a huge Milo fan, as are you. And I have never been a huge Steve Bannon fan. I can't say that I, you know, disliked him for any particular reason. But I just, you know,
I felt like he could have brought this issue forward in different ways that would have not been so controversial, way to put that. I have liked Milo, and I felt like they cut him loose when they really could have been there for him pretty easily as well. And I'm not saying that Milo didn't maybe say, okay, I'm done, and wanted to separate himself some too, but he has been treated very poorly by the media and by the liberal left. And I am still one of his strongest supporters to this day, and that probably is not going to change.
Well, and part of the interview, and I can't remember what the name of the show was. I don't know if you have your notes with you. But
actually,
one of our other followers, Ben Shapiro, was on it because he was interviewed. And, you know, to this day, I knew he had walked away from Breitbart not long ago, but it was never really clear why. But he interviewed on the show on the Steve O'Bannon legacy, and you know, it was really interesting what he was saying, that, you know, he it came to a point during the primaries that Breitbart was going a completely different direction that was against his beliefs and against what, you know, his core ideals, and that he just had to step down and move away. And, you know, I know we're going off subject here, but it's just something that's really, really important that, you know, it's made me think about a lot of things in my life right now that, you know, I need to move away from certain people. Because I'm starting to see things a whole different way now that I saw this program. And, you know, if Ben Shapiro had not been on it, I probably would have taken it with a grain of salt. But, you know, he's a very intelligent person, and he knows what he's talking about. And for him to have said that I had to just leave because things were not going the way they should have been, it just, you know, he knew there were red flags all over. And so, yes, I think Milo probably, you know, he probably just thought, I need to get out of here. And
yeah.
So maybe just things all happen at the right time for him.
Yes.
Who knows?
I agree. Yes. I don't think he was brokenhearted by it. Do you?
I'm sorry?
I don't think Milo was brokenhearted by it.
No, I don't think so. I don't really think he has. I think he's actually doing better now. And, you know, he's free. He's free to explore what he wants to do. And, you know, he's not tied down to anyone or any ideology other than his own, which is always a good thing. And I think this is part of, you know, Claudette Colvin's legacy is that, you know, she did something that she probably never thought would mean much in the way of anything other than she was fulfilling her constitutional right to a seat on a bus because she had paid for it. And she stood up for herself, probably not knowing that this was going to snowball into something a lot bigger for her in her entire life. And, you know, and I'm really glad that, you know, they don't teach you this in school. And that's why when I posted about Claudette Colvin last week, I had a lot of I probably had about 40 PMs telling me, wow, who is she? And it's like, you know, all we've ever been taught is Rosa Parks. I go, absolutely. And, you know, if here's a link to her biography, go read it. And they would come back to me and they were like, wow, that is just incredible. Here we have just been, you know, shoved with Rosa Parks down our throats. And here a 15-year-old girl actually, you know, was a first, but never given her accolades. And yet, you know, she probably was okay with it. She was fine. And I'm glad that now, you know, we get to sit here and talk about her and talk about her accomplishments and her life and that she's not leaving this earth without being talked about. And so in a way, you know, I think she's been given her dues because people are not talking about her. And I'm able to educate others on who she was because they had no idea.
Right.
And
I'm familiar with her. And I knew our other subject matter a little bit more because I am in the science industry, but I did not know of this gal. I had to learn about her before the show.
Yeah.
So
and that's like a lot of people. That's like a lot of people. And, you know, I mean, I do a lot of reading. You know, when I'm not around, my friends they're always asking me, what are you doing? I go, I'm reading about something. I'm reading about so-and-so person. And, you know, you asked me recently on some prospective reading material on Theodore Roosevelt. And, you know, fortunately, there are dozens and dozens of books. And so I think I have gone through about five or six of them and the initial ones that came out. And he was a brilliant man. He wrote a lot of things because he was a naturalist and good friends with John Muir. And, I mean, some of his writings go back to, you know, 1890 or so and earlier. And very interesting insights as to that man. But like I tell people, you know, if you don't know about Claudette Colvin, research her, read a book about her. There's many books out there. You know, get inspired. That's what I do. I don't know a lot of things, you know. I know, like everyone else, I try to do my research and I find people fascinating. And that's why I also like doing this show because, you know, like I said, we're not just political and just firestorming every second about what's going on. And, you know, we like to actually talk about important subjects. And to me this week, this was Claudette Colvin was an important topic, as well as our next subject, Julian Percy. So, or Percy Julian. Sorry about that. Anyhow, are there any last thoughts that you want to talk about on Claudette Colvin that we haven't talked about?
Well, those are my two things. After I researched the two things I took away from it, and I always try to do that. What hits me the most are this 15-year-old knew her constitutional rights. That, you know, is a big thing. A lot of 15-year-olds probably aren't real familiar with the Constitution. And also that she was okay with that, taking the credit for all of that. And I think that's, if you're really for a cause, the infamy that goes with it isn't important. It's the cause as a whole and the movement as a whole that matters. And she definitely lived that.
I personally believe from, you know, a lot of, we have a lot of racial injustice going on in this country, and, you know, a lot of it is being blamed on the election of Donald Trump because he has brought the worst out in the white supremacists. But, you know, I saw something interesting this morning where, and it was on a black talk show, and you know the host, you know, he said something about to the effect that, you know, he might have brought out the worst in white supremacists, but he's also brought out the worst in black people. And you know, Claudette Colvin, you know, and I'm sure in her time, she, you know, her last thought was to go and kill white people and loot and burn their homes down and businesses. You know, maybe people need to go back to, you know, the early civil rights movement of the 1950s and see, you know, Claudette Colvin, what she did, you know, was ahead of her time. She was steadfast on what she wanted to do, but she did it under her First Amendment right, without having to hurt anyone. And I
right.
think a lot of the young people now and a lot of the young, especially the angry mobster mentality of some of these, you know, movements, could use a good dose of education into the past. You know, because this guerrilla mentality today is going to kill our country completely, and it's not a good thing.
No. Absolutely not. Oh.
Well, let's move on. Let's take another short break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about Percy Julian, the scientist, and then we'll wrap up the show for the last 5 minutes, and then we'll go from there. You're listening to Talk America with Shay H. Bradley and my guest co-host, Vicki Knudsen. We will be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I am Shay H. Bradley, and with my guest co-host, Vicki Knudsen, you are on Talk America One. We're going to jump in now, probably for the next 20 minutes or so. We're going to talk about a man who was not only a civil rights activist, he was an academic, a chemist, a scientist, a medical professional. He was born in Alabama in 1899 and became one of our country's leading chemists. And he's a very interesting man. I first encountered him when I was younger, I believe in high school. I didn't read a whole lot about him until recently, the past couple of years, and taken aback by how brilliant he was, and how, you know, he created hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of chemical bases for a lot of the things that we use today and that we take for granted. And we are talking about Percy Julian. I could honestly say that he's one of my heroes, and it's funny because I have a lot of black friends on Facebook, and a lot of them didn't even know who he was. I brought that up about a couple years ago, and even now, a lot of people don't know who he is. As I'm sure, Vicki, you told me you weren't too brushed up on Mr. Julian, were you?
Well, I knew more about him than I did Colvin. That's Claudette Colvin, that's for sure, just because of my history in science and some of the things that he invented with chemistry. I have a lot of pretty significant chemistry background. So I did know of some of the stuff he invented. Plus, I'm from Iowa, and George Washington Carver, I'm sure you're familiar with him, correct?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. He was a black scientist. He did a lot for agriculture and many other things, and I went to Iowa State, so I think that I probably learned a whole lot more about him because of where I live, but learning about chemistry and things as I grow up, I definitely knew this thing was brought into the equation, and I knew a little bit more about him and what he had given to science than I did, like I said, our other subject matter. So
his life is very interesting. Oh, go ahead, Vicki. I'll go ahead and I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Some of the things that he was able to do, he has over 130 chemical patents, and he was one of the first African Americans to get a doctorate in chemistry. Those things
absolutely
back when he was able to do that were unheard of. So
yeah.
I think that he probably, you know, broke a lot of glass ceilings and was denied a lot of opportunities that he didn't let stop him. And I don't think that you can get a much better role model for today's youth than somebody who did something like that. So
and sadly, a lot of the youth do not even know who he is, which I find very ironic because, you know, a lot of them know all the, you know, the big pop star celebrities and, you know, singers. And yet here is a man who, you know, he was born in 1899 and, you know, he was the grandson of former slaves. And, you know, he was not allowed to go to high school back then because there were no high schools open to black students. And, you know, everybody takes school for granted these days. And, you know, if they studied Percy Julian's history and go, wow, you know, everybody takes everything for granted now. Like, it has always been here for us, but in reality, it really hasn't. And so, you know, he finally, you know, he applied to DePauw University and in Indiana and Greencastle. And, you know, he had to take high-level classes, high school classes. And finally, you know, he graduated his class and, you know, went on to university. And he became an instructor at Fisk University. And he finally left there in 1923 to go to Harvard University to finish his master's degree. And then he, you know, this is an interesting thing. He traveled, for a while, and he finally ended up going to the University of Vienna in 31 and got his PhD there before coming back to the United States. In 1935, he earned acclaim internationally by synthesizing, and I forgive me for how you spell it. It's a physocygamine from a calabar bean to create a treatment for glaucoma. Now, see, those are a lot of things that young people don't understand and don't study in school. I mean, I wish I would have when I was in school. We never did, so we were never open. We were never what's that word I'm looking for? Exposed to people like Claudette Colvin or Percy Julian. You know, I think my life would have been a lot different if we had been. What do you think, Vicki? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, there are so many scientists that have, influenced us over the years and have got us to where we are today. And this generation of scientists probably made the biggest advances in science that has ever happened. Even the scientists today are making the leaps and bounds that were made back then, because this is really the blueprint for everything that we are doing today. And the steroids that he made, the corticosteroids, they're a basis for so many things that we treat people with. You know, and as an asthmatic, you know, inhaled steroids and many forms of steroids are, you know, keep people alive and they keep their quality of life very well. And that is such a huge pioneering philosophy that had to, you know, had it not come as early as it did, we would still be looking for ways to help people because, you know, people died of asthma and similar diseases at a much higher rate 50 years ago because we just didn't know how to treat it. We didn't know what caused it. We didn't know all of those things. So I don't know when albuterol was invented, but that was the very first treatment for it, and that's all we had for the longest of time, which isn't enough for severe asthmatics, I'm sure you know that. But
So having that basis is life changing. It's as life changing as any antibiotic or any vaccine or any, you know, the antibiologics that are helping people with, you know, autoimmune diseases. All of those things are just, he definitely has, he should be given a lot of credit.
Absolutely. And, I, you know, one thing that's important, you know, talking about Julian Percy and Julian, I don't know why I keep saying Julian. I always say it backwards. Anyhow, my apologies for that. You know, because he was black, he was rejected by many companies when he was out of university and looking for work. You know, this man had a PhD and he couldn't find work because people, you know, they would find out eventually that he was black. And so that was, you know, back then they probably had a stigma of like, how can a black man, you know, have a PhD and how intelligent can he be? And I'm quite certain that's what the mentality was back then. And, you know, he finally arrived at the Glidden Company and he invented something called aerofoam, which is, and this is a really funny thing when I've been studying him, is that, you know, we have soy milk now and soybeans. And, you know, I'm like a lot of people. I never heard of soybeans in my life until recently, and probably in the last maybe 15 years of that. But this scientist, he was using soybeans for experiments, and a lot of the things that he invented are from soybeans. And you know, aerofoam is one of those things that you know, it was to put out oil and gas fires, especially during World War II. But they're all based from soybean, which is to me astonishing because I have never, like I said, I've never heard of soybeans until recently in my life. And mm-hmm. I just didn't know they were being experimented and used even way back then in the 50s. You know, this gentleman, he created so many things. You know, he learned to synthesize hormones like progesterone and testosterone. And one of the big things he was famous for is for cortisone, which, you know, I bet a lot of people that use cortisone don't even know where it came from or who invented it. And yeah, there was a point where I didn't even know. Because I remember when I was younger and training for athletics, there were times where I had to have cortisone shots. And so even then, I guess I didn't care. And once right. I started reading about Percy Julian's history, it's like, whoa. And I started telling people, and they're like, who's Percy Julian? I go, he's the one that invented what they're injecting into your arm. And they would be like, what? I go, yeah.
Well,
you know,
a lot of people confuse corticosteroids with anabolic steroids, and anabolic steroids are the ones, you know, weightlifters use to illegally make their muscles bigger, and they're not the same thing. So I always have to say, because people say, oh, I'm going to have big, strong muscles after I get done with these steroids. I'm like, no, you're not. Different steroids, but I always have to joke about that. Yeah, no. One common word, but not the same chemical properties, you know. But, yeah, his – well, the other thing I was surprised to learn about him is that this also – he was also born in Montgomery, Alabama, which is the same place that our other guest on the show, in theory, Claudette Colvin, was, you know, had the same bus incident go on. So they probably had their lives intersected probably a little bit more than we would have thought. But just by picking two random people
– Yeah, I think by the time Claudette Colvin came around, I'm pretty sure that, you know, he was already in university, and he was probably at the time in, you know, out of the country traveling. And so I think by the time he was done with all that, it was, you know, Claudette Colvin had been born. You know, one of the things that that really kind of blew my mind was that, you know, he was one of the first black millionaires. And, that just, you know, that's just incredible. Because I don't think a lot of, especially the black youth today, I don't really think they admire or know what Percy Julian has done in his life. And to become, because if you ask somebody who the first black millionaire, probably tell you Michael Jackson or, you know, an entertainer. But here you have a man who was a scientist, and, you know, isn't it incredible that, I mean, even to me, I was like, wow, that is just the most interesting thing that, you know, could ever happen in history. And people, a lot of people don't know about it.
Well, and the times he was turned down, too, for jobs, or like his wiki account says, Appleton, Wisconsin, which isn't too far from me, by the way, was actually a sundown town, and so he chose, you know, not to take a job there. And when you think of Glidden, what do you think of? I think
paint.
Of paint and adhesives myself. And but, you know, back then they were a little bit, they were a much bigger company, and they did a whole lot more things with soybeans. So I learned about the history of Glidden that I didn't know. And so he actually had wrote them for a 5-gallon sample of oil to use as a starting point, and they gave it to him. So, and then let's also talk about the hormones he developed. Because the estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone are all very important for the reproductive cycle, and they help women with infertility issues. And you don't think about those hormones so much unless women are in, like, menopause, and sometimes they're supplemented with hormone replacement therapy. That's where they got all of their fame from. But they are very instrumental in infertility practices today. So he has helped millions of babies be born from his experiments and his creations. So what
now,
what a nice jump for.
Now, is this something that they might you know, talk about? Do they talk about Percy Julian and saying, like, in you know, I'm not familiar in the different areas of medicine, but I've always wondered if they talked about him in medical school or in other areas of biochemistry or anything to do with sciences, where, you know, that they would talk about him, about his accomplishments and why and how he helped us get to where we're at in our society today?
Not really. There are some colleges that do offer, like, a history of science. And even then, you know, there's so much history of science that it's hard to hit everything.
Sure.
I can remember learning who invented the microscope in microbiology. I can remember learning that, but I don't remember learning a whole lot about the history of science. I have read some books since. I am sort of a nerd, and, like, I read The History of Cancer not too long ago, and it's a big, thick, fat book, but it was fascinating, and the treatments and how they developed them and their failures that were so devastating. But that's where I got to learn about a lot of this, learning on my own about history of science. The most recent book I read was a book called Lab Girl. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this book, but it's about a woman who grew up in Austin, Minnesota, and which is not too far from here either. And she wrote, she went on to get a PhD in chemistry and has made her own lab and done many wonderful things, but she wrote a book about her life. And I found it interesting. And so I read that book too, but even that's just her, it's really her biography with science. And it didn't go back and tell you what happened in the early 1900s to get her there and how the generations of scientists before her, what they did and how they got you there. But,
wow.
You know, you have to learn from the beginning to a point. But they don't always credit the scientists and give you a lot of background on the science itself. So I would have to say, no, the majority of people probably don't know about, even in the science-related fields, probably are not aware of who Percy Julian is and what he did.
Which is, it's a sad reality, really. I posted on my Facebook page numerous times, and it's just like Claudette Colvin. I just find him fascinating. And, you know, I'm one of these people that I'm not, you know, I'm not a big entertainment person. I don't get starstruck. It's not my thing. You know, I've got favorite singers and very few favorite actors, male or female. But I've always gravitated towards the sciences. And so to me, reading and getting to know who these people were and what they contributed to, to our American society is quite an achievement in itself. I just honestly think the more people would understand and read about them, you know, and I think that's part of my, it's going to be one of my goals this year, is to really pull up people that, pull people out of the woodwork that people have never heard of or have been given very little exposure, because they need to be known and not just forgotten in history. So here we've got,
you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've learned a lot. I've learned that, you know, and people like Claudette Colvin and Percy Julian, they could be such a powerful force for, you know, even civil rights today, because these people, you know, instead of feeling like somebody owes you something or you feel entitled, you know, neither of these two people felt entitled other than what was their constitutional right.
Right.
And anything else didn't matter. But mm-hmm. they had the determination and the drive in their soul to do what was right for them, for their time, and they did it, even though they had all the odds stacked up against them. And to me, that's why, to me, they're more important than a lot of, you know, a lot of other black people that are more famous for what they did. Percy Julian was such an amazing person. If anybody, you know, if you go through his list of achievements, they're in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And I still haven't finished half the list because it's just, it's incredible what he invented and created.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, he did die of liver cancer on the 19th of April in 75. The nice thing, he was the first black person or black chemist to become part of the National Academy of the Sciences in 1973. You know, he lived a very, you know, very hard but interesting life as a young black man, but he persevered, and you know, he overcame a lot of obstacles that were thrown in his face, and I couldn't even imagine how and why, and you know, he just must have had such a strong personality that nothing was going to bother him, because he had such a passion for what he wanted to learn and study, and I bet he never even thought that he would be one of the leading scientists in this world and create a lot of interesting you know, things that we use in our life every day to day.
Yes, very true. And then, you know, which he was able to take the use of steroids and, you know, give them to an actual medical researcher who found that they were effective in helping people with rheumatoid arthritis. And, you know, that's also an autoimmune disease and inflammation, so damaging to joints. And there really wasn't anything they could do for people with rheumatoid arthritis and the other arthritis is back then, and you were just expected to live with it and the disfiguring joint disease that went with it. But then they figured out the corticosteroids helped it, and it improved dramatically the quality of life for those people. And, you know, that was back in the 40s when we were just learning how to treat diseases. Antibiotics were new. And so at a time when people were pretty much told you'll have to suffer, he came through with this, and it was, you know, it was a breakthrough medically, a huge breakthrough, just like antibiotics were. So he, you know, not only did he bring a lot of life into this world with the drugs that he made for, that it wound up helping with fertility issues, he also helped people with chronic pain and immune diseases with basically this research. So he's helped so many people.
And I hope people study him. And I would like to, you know, let people know, go and read on Percy Julian's life. There is a documentary film, which I highly recommend. On it's part of the Nova series entitled Forgotten Genius. If you have not seen it, watch it. It'll enthrall you. It'll bring you into his world and make you respect him a little more, and make you understand. Yeah, make you understand that, you know, there are some really interesting people in this world. If we just open our eyes and our hearts a little more, you know, there are people that have done things for mankind that, you know, are still not known. You know, before we exit on this segment, there's something that, you know, Percy Julian once said, the right of a people to live where they want to without fear is more important than my science. And that's very, very true. You know, we didn't talk about his personal life too much, but, you know, that comes from some things that happened, you know, after he got married. But that's for another time. I just wanted to leave this segment with a nice, you know, air of, you know, this man to me, he's a hero. He's a hero to me like an astronaut is. And, you
right.
know, Percy Julian, we thank you for, you know, your invention of steroids and what you've done for the sciences. And I commend you. And I hope other people can get out there and get to know who you are.
Yeah. I think they would learn a lot, Shay. he probably also, you know, prevented a whole lot of unplanned pregnancies and a whole lot of abortions with the birth control pills that he developed. Although the beginning of birth control was very, let's just say, dangerous. It had a lot of side effects to it. But that's what the safe version of birth control pills are based on, those hormones.
Sure.
And that's, even though they were the very first pills, you're probably giving them way too high of doses. But that's a whole other subject, like you said. But he really did improve the quality of life for a lot of people.
And yeah, and you know what? That's why I'm one of those people that loves to learn, you know, new subjects and new things. And, you know, I find it really sad. Even with people in my generation, they just don't. They don't want to read anymore. They don't want to, you know, study anymore. And I'm just one of those people that loves to watch a lot of different shows. I like to look through magazines, you know, science magazines or medical magazines or just, you know, stupid things that other people are like not interested in. but it gives me a sense of being, you know, being a good person, being a good human being, because, you know, aside from a personality, you know, people say the opposite a lot of times, like, you know, you're just a horrible person. I go, well, if you got to know me, you'd understand, you would understand where I'm coming from. You know, people that don't know me very well are, you know, I come off to them very brash and very just, you know, a mean person. Then, you know, sometimes people are like that.
You shouldn't apologize
it's
for that.
Just...
it's the way you are. So
that's right. Well, let's talk about Memorial Weekend really quick. We're not going to do a show Friday, everyone. We are going to enjoy our 4-day weekend. I'm looking forward to it, actually. because I'm going to barbecue here at home. We've invited our neighbors. We've got our, hopefully our friends across the street who are going to play their band for us. And so we're going to do the show the following week on back on our regular day on Friday. And we've been playing with the idea of doing a different days. And I'm getting comfortable doing a 3:30 show. I enjoy it. I don't know, Vicky, how you feel about it. I like it. And you know, everybody out there, you can always go to the Facebook page to Talk America One on Facebook. You can listen there. You can listen on any mobile device. And if you didn't catch the show, you can always go to the Facebook page or to Blog Talk Radio to Talk America One and re-listen to shows. I try to upload them to Facebook. A lot of times I don't have time to do it. So I'm trying to, you know, we're on our 40th. Next week I think will be our 40th show. And
wow.
Which will actually be, yeah, it'll be a year in June, on June 16th, which I can't believe I've been on the air for a year. And, you know, we're getting close. You know, we're doing well. We could do better. It's just that, you know, this year we've had some major changes. And so I'm trying to find my way. But I think we're getting there. And I'm feeling a lot more comfortable on the air. And at first it was very shaky and I was very nervous. And now, you know, I get on the air and I feel like this is home to me. It's where I belong and I'm comfortable and I love talking. And sometimes an hour and a half isn't enough time. I mean, we're already on 4 minutes. So anyway, I just want to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day weekend, and remember why we're celebrating. I come from a military family, and I'm so grateful to my brothers and my uncle for what they have given me. I'm able to be here in peace in life and with liberty, and because of them, you know, we're able to do what we do. Any last thoughts, Vicky?
No, the same thing. I wish you a happy Memorial Day weekend. There's a lot of people that don't say that because it's supposed to be a very solemn holiday. But I'm okay with you. I think that's what the people who died in wars,
yeah,
in wartime, and for our freedoms would want. They'd want you to have a weekend that you celebrated and enjoyed yourself at. That's what they fought for. So I'm fine with the happy,
yeah,
Memorial Day weekend, even though not everybody is. And I am very grateful for the people, for my brothers and sisters that died doing what they needed to do to get us where we are today, and with freedom and with our way of life. And, you know, having my father just die this year, who was a Navy veteran, and other things, it's going to mean a little bit more to me than I probably ever have before.
Sure.
So.
Well, I think people that don't have military in their family, and I know a lot of people that have never served and none of their families have served. So to them, you know, a happy Memorial Day means fun and games and party. You know, even though I say happy Memorial Day, you know, and again, if people know me, they would understand, because I get the same thing from a lot of people. It's like, why do you say happy Memorial Day? I go, you know, I'm happy because of what came before us and what people sacrificed so we could be here. So to me, happy is a whole different meaning. You know, to me, it's not going to be all, you know, games and party. I'm going to remember what my uncles did when they went to Vietnam, how they came back, you know, with mental issues and, you know, problems,
yeah,
which they overcame. You know, I have a brother who is a Navy SEAL. And I have other family members in law enforcement. So to me, happy Memorial Day is it's a happy thing for me because I'm grateful for what they've done so I could be here. And, you know, I hope people don't misunderstand that. You know, I just, like I said, people that don't come from a military background are, to them, it means a whole different thing.
Yes, I completely agree. Anyway, great show, great talking to you, and I wish your weekend to be grand, and I will see you next week.
Well, you have a great weekend, Vicki. Thank you so much, everybody. I need to thank my opening music, which is Vyacheslav Dragunov 89, and that is Beyond the Borders of Imagination. We are going to be leaving with Scott Holmes and Empires. For Talk America One, this is J.H. Bradley with my co-host Vicki Knudsen, wishing you a great long extended weekend. Bye, everyone. We will see you next week.